Well, our next guest wrote a piece in the Post. Beginning readers need one language at a time. So for another view, Dr. Michael Johnson, a senior fellow at the New Zealand Initiative, was former associate dean at the Faculty of Education at Vic University. Dr. Johnson, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good to have you here, Michael. So what's your case here, Michael? You say that there is a sound educational reason to focus on the English first.
In one particular context, which is beginning readers. So, you know, I agree with the PPTA person who just spoke that young people need to become familiar with Māori words, and they can do that in spoken language, and they can do that reading once they've got fluent with the mapping between spelling and sound in English, assuming they're learning to read in English. If they're learning to read in Māori, then obviously they should be having Māori texts. The point is that in English, there are about 40 rules that if young people know, they're able to recognise words that are in their spoken vocabularies that they haven't seen in print before by sounding them out. Now, Māori has different rules to map between spelling and sound. And so what they're doing with these very early readers is having only words that conform to those rules. So that excludes about 30% of English words as well, by the way, which are irregular and don't conform to those rules. And the reason for that is that we want young people, young children, to get fluent with those spelling-to-sound mappings so that they feel confident in their reading before we start to introduce spellings that don't conform to those rules, which include irregular English words and Māori words.
Okay, let's
go
on the pen.
It's not a ban on Māori or anything like that. It's just one specific context for very early readers so that they can get fluent with those spelling sound mappings.
Ellie Jones.
Oh, I loved reading this. Michael, it was really... I like reading stuff that makes you think, because when I first heard this story and it came out, and of course there was the pylon, which at the time I went, yeah, that's racist. That's just... No, you shouldn't be removing those words. But when I read your article and I heard, you know, the reasoning behind it and that it wasn't just a sort of an ideology that was being chucked at it, it really made me think. And it made sense too, because you're basically talking about phonics. Right?
That's right, exactly. Precisely what I'm talking about. And thank you for that, because it frustrated me that wasn't articulated in any of the coverage.
Okay. Well, I think that point you've just made now, what did you say, that around 30% of English words would be removed for the same reason?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, this is the kind of information...
What would be an example of an English word or a couple of English words that might be removed?
Well, a really obvious one is a word like yacht, right? If you applied the spelling sound mappings to that, you get yatched. And so that we need to remember what a big cognitive task it is for 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds to be learning to read for the first time. It's huge. And if you watch young people when they're undertaking that, you know, at first they're very halting, they sound out each word really carefully, and it's a big effort. They're not taking in much meaning at that point anyway. What they're doing is getting fluent with articulating the words from the spelling. And when they get to a certain point, then it starts to flow. And at that point, they feel a sense of confidence. Now they're a reader. Then you can start to introduce the irregular words, Māori words, that kind of thing.
All right. Now, what do you think about this? 2101, would love to hear your thoughts on this, Dr. Johnson here on this particular angle. So Ellie Jones, fully on board. Simon Pound.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, as I think, you know, like the New Zealand Initiative, I'm probably just a little bit more ambitious for the ability for kids in New Zealand to do a little bit more.
What are you trying to say?
What I mean by that is, like, if you look at how people are raised in European countries where they have multiple languages from the get-go, you can find an enormous amount of research to show that having multiple languages helps with brain development and great outcomes. And in those schooling systems, they don't kind of pick an arbitrary year and go, for this year, we can't do this. And I think in this same context, this beginner learner, this won't be the first time that they're being exposed to te reo. If they've come through a kindergarten, a play centre, like, these are words and terms, and I think we can, like a French or German or English speaker, have more than one way that a Roman character of an E sounds, and keep that in our heads, and that can be a positive.
They can do it. in other words, Michael?
Well, I mean, you're right about oral language. Look, if young children are brought up with two languages spoken around them, they will acquire both seamlessly. And that's because oral language is something that we're biologically programmed to take in, especially when we're very young. So no argument there. But no, when it comes to reading, that is a huge cognitive task. It's a totally different kettle of fish. Mm. Now, I'm not actually familiar with how that works in schools in Europe where they are commonly bilingual, but I'd be very surprised if they try to teach them to read in French and German at the same time.
Yeah.
If they did, it wouldn't be as effective.
Well, hang on, because there are quite a few, because the question of the day today is... are you trilingual? And there are many people from Europe texting in Dr. Johnson saying actually they learned a couple of languages from presumably a very early age.
They learned to speak those languages. Did they learn to read them together at the same time? That's a very different question.
Well through many different countries where bilingual or trilingual education is more common, yes, people do learn things at the same time. But I think the point that you made in the article was well made, that this has been made on the basis of an approach to learning and there is actually a concept behind this rather than piling in. But I do wonder about, like, you know, maybe it would be, well, 80% of the first learner books will be mainly in English with standard pronunciation, but 20% will bring te reo in because it's an important part of sending a signal that this is a big part of the country. And I think any child that's gone through any early childhood education will have been exposed to not just the language, but the words written down.
You are being really idealistic. No, you are. What you're saying is, you know, as we heard from the PPTA too, is, you know, we need to make sure that people know they're in New Zealand, Aotearoa. They need to, you know, see these words and understand. We're not saying that, and I don't think that Michael is saying that. He's talking about
not a
purely cognitive ability that a child has. So, you know, giving a kid the ability to feel confident and learn, because I think the confidence that Michael was talking about is the key thing here.
Is it idealistic or is it pragmatic to go
80%?
80% can be in the straight, and maybe we just keep 20% in the
final point, Michael.
And you can still be familiarising them with Māori words. The teacher can be reading them books with Māori words in them. They can be using Māori words in the classroom. That all of that is fine. It's in the specific context when they themselves are learning to read in the very early phases. It is a huge cognitive effort.
Dr. Johnson, thank you. Kia ora. Nice to have you on the panel. Appreciate it. That's interesting stuff, isn't it?
It's good,
a lot of response here.
I always feel like if we can expect kids to understand how to say camembert, I think we can just expect a little bit more when it comes to
today.
He's not saying that. You're being inflammatory. I think we can be more ambitious, that kids can hold more than one thing in there.
It's not about being ambitious or not. It's about understanding how kids' brains work. And you can teach them to say karakia or camembert, but what he's saying is looking at the words and sounding them out.
Ellie Jones.
And you understand this.
Ellie Jones, how do you spell yacht?
Yeah, I'm 58. If I don't know how to spell yacht.
Okay, right, it's 10 to 6. The